Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hi, I'm Bunny Guinness, and this is my podcast, Bunny in the Garden, with someone special. Someone who is well known for something other than their green fingers, but who is also a mustard-keen gardener. I'll discover them through their garden, why, how, and when they garden, the best tips they've learnt, and their gardening style and approach.
It's great to be back with Her Grace, the Duchess of Rutland, Emma, at her garden surrounding the beautiful Beaver Castle. Emma has never flinched from a challenge, and after being swept off her feet by the Duke of Rutland in 1992, she threw herself in helping run the castle, creating and restoring some fabulous gardens and really getting her new home on the map and creating a viable entity. Emma, it's lovely to be back here. Well, I was probably here about 20 years ago when you'd recently moved in, I think.
Gosh.
Do you remember? You probably don't remember. Gosh. So much. You've done so much.
Well, no, but that's scary because, you know, when I always think that these houses, most probably after about 25 years, you should be looking at moving on. Because I think the energy that you bring into them when you arrive is what they all need, Bunny. They need the inspiration and energy of youth.
But I don't believe that your energy levels will ever trickle out. I reckon you could do this for another 50 years.
Ask me another day, but we had 5 chefs walk out today. So, you know, there's always a drama, isn't there?
Yes.
It's like Carry On Castles. There's always something that crops up.
Carrying On Castles, that should be a programme. Is it a programme?
Not yet.
Just made it? Oh, right, that's your next project.
Yes.
Carry On Castles. That would be so good. But I remember when I first met you, I came here and you'd forgotten I was coming. I don't blame you. You had so much to do. And you were making dresses for your daughters, hand sewing dresses, weren't you?
Yes.
And I thought, my God, here she is running the castle, you know, all these children. I think you had 3 or 4 at that point.
Yes.
And you were still making dresses for them. And I couldn't even make a skirt, let alone a dishcloth. So, I mean, my admiration.
They most probably never wore them. But, yeah,
sure
that was
did.
A bit of
I'm
a handover sure. from my mum, who always made every outfit for me on the kitchen table back at home in Wales. So, yeah.
And they were beautiful outfits that you wanted to wear?
Well, yeah, there was nothing else. So that's what you wore.
Right. But also, when I've heard lots of podcasts, I've obviously heard your brilliant podcast where you interview chatelaines of all the various historic and beautiful houses in the country, but you often emphasize you are a farmer's daughter. Now I wonder why you always emphasize it, because now you've morphed on really from being a farmer's daughter. You wouldn't think of her, you know, with straw coming out of her ears, and you know, but is it because you think when people meet a duchess, they think, oh, wow, and they're a bit intimidated? So you like to make them feel at home. So you say, well, I'm a farmer's daughter. So you're grounded, in other words.
Yeah, very good point, Bunny. And actually, the only other person who's ever pointed that out to me, just as you have now, is my friend Jane Northumberland, who's another duchess.
Yes.
And she keeps saying, we are very bored of hearing the fact that you're a Welsh farmer's daughter. But my answer really to you is that it doesn't truly matter where you're at. It's always where you're from. And in remaining grounded, it keeps you where you're at in a very healthy way and mindset. So that's been my mindset for life, that never forget my roots.
Oh, I see.
And I think when you marry into a heritage like this, it's very, very easy to get swept away by the excitement and the glamour of everything that surrounds you.
Yes.
But actually, my world was very glamorous too, in my mind. Mm. And so I've hopefully handed that on to all my children. So the DNA they have is half Welsh, and they love that side of their bloodline as much as this. Mm. Although this is always going to be, when you've got a castle on the top of the hill, an illustrious history that goes back to 1066, the more glamorous of the two.
Well, it's certainly romantic, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I do think that when you meet people with the title, people are either very sycophantic towards them, aren't they?
Because what do you mean? Oh my God. What does that mean?
Well, but you sort of, oh my God, he's a duke. So really, oh God, you're lovely. Yes, yeah. You know, no, two bags full, man. You want to kowtow into their favour. To them, and I think
well, not
do
all
that,
people,
or else they think, oh bloody knob, you know, entitled, whatever, don't they? So it does produce very diverse reactions,
yeah.
And so I think that's quite awkward to handle, must be for you.
Well, initially, when I first became a duchess, well, I became a lady before I became a duchess.
Yeah,
I remember saying to my mother-in-law. Oh, I can't bear the way everyone calls me Lady Granby. And said, you know, don't worry about it. Just let it happen. People will either decide they like you or not. Mm. It's just, I had to understand and evolve to be it. It didn't come naturally at all.
So just a bit on your background, just for those who haven't heard your podcast and don't know about you, you're highly dyslexic. So you had to go away to school. Because in it's often in sort of middle class families, the boys went away to school and the girls went to the local grammar or whatever. But because you were dyslexic, you didn't get in there. You hated it. You ran away continually. You loved helping with lambing on the farm with your small hands to pull out any backwards lambs. You helped with the B&B. And then you went to learn how to be an opera singer. So you got a place at the Guildhall School of Music, which is not a pushover, is it? It's really difficult to get into. But you realised you weren't going to make, or it didn't fit with you, or what? Why was it we don't see you up there now doing Carmen or whatever?
It's good. No, I think most probably what happened, I was a very, very, had a very strong voice. I had a scholarship to go to the Guildhall when I was 16.
Scholarship, that's
and
amazing.
So it was an amazing voice at a very young age. I'd spent since the age of about 7 travelling Wales and the Welsh borders, doing Eisteddfods and festivals. So they're always out there winning something. My father used to go back home after I'd done a competition and he never said, how would you get on? He always said, did you win? So there was a high achieving a sort of gene within my bloodline. And when I got to the Guildhall, number one, I hated being in the Barbican. So I couldn't cope with the sort of concrete jungle of looking out to sing at a concrete wall. So, and I think my dyslexia really kicked in with things like sight singing and singing in different languages. So that was always a struggle. And at that age, at sort of 19, I thought, I don't want this enough. And I don't know if I'm ever going to make it past the chorus in an opera. I don't know if I'm ever going to be the leading part. And so I'm going to move on quite quickly. And one of the main things which I write about in my book, which is called Accidental Duchess, is I'd always had in my mind's eye that my journey was to go out and find a really lovely Herefordshire farmer to make my life with. And of course, there were no Herefordshire farmers in the Barbican. So hence, that's how I ended up thinking sort of strategically and practically, I suppose. So there's a lot of that with me. And that comes out a lot with day-to-day running of this estate. So I'm very visionary. I'm quite artistic. I live in my head quite a lot of the time, but also very practical. And so that meant I went off to train to be a land agent in Southampton. And and that has also equipped me with lots of the skills to do this job.
Oh, right. I see. So maybe we'll have a celebrity version of The Voice and you can take up the mantle there and
perform. Who knows? Exactly. Well, funny enough, the podcast has been a great way to use your voice, because now I'm sure you get this, Bunny, as well, but you'll go around the country or the world and people hear your voice and they'll come up to you and say, I know that voice.
It's very funny, isn't it? Yeah. Sometimes it's not easy. I remember working with Linda Snell from The Archers, and they obviously tweak their voices, and when you meet them in real life you think, gosh, that's Linda Snell, but you have to really think. But yours is your natural voice, and it's very recognizable. It's a very warm voice, and very nicely, easily chatty voice.
Yeah,
very good indeed. Yeah. So the castle is vast, isn't it? You've got over 2 acres of roof. I remember when I last came, I think you'd been up the night before with buckets and leaking roofs and sort of gullies that were blocked or something like that. So it is...
A hand down a gutter to pull out a dead pigeon, most probably.
Yes, most likely. And it's said that Walt Disney visited it as a lad and modelled his fairy tale castles on it, which I think is a lovely story. And when you approach it... from Stamford, it really does look like one of his castles, doesn't it?
Well, that's exactly what Capability Brown was really writing in all his documents in our archives, that it had to be looked at and be beautiful and looked out from and have a beautiful view. So often the garden here, Bunny, I feel, is about the views and the vista instead of the detail.
Yes. No, but it is dramatic, isn't it? It's a hugely dramatic garden, I have to say. It must be one of the most dramatic gardens in the country because of the changes in levels. Phenomenal, aren't they? But you've got 5 children.
Yes.
And you've had 5 miscarriages. So you've been very, very busy, as well as putting the show on the road, as it were. And so when you've finished running things here, your eldest son presumably gets it, or isn't it like that in your family?
It absolutely is. It's not dissimilar to a Welsh farming family. So irrespective of what's happened in the rest of the world, generally aristocracy is not like the royal family, because that's moved on in a very modern way. And we have something called primogeniture, which means that the titles are all entailed with the estates and the property.
Yeah. Yeah.
So unless we have a case where a daughter from a title goes to European courts to break this, this is the case for any estates in Britain that have primogeniture. Mm.
And are all the children happy with that? It's accepted.
Well, who
and
knows?
And the guy who's taking it on, I mean, because it's a big thing to take it on. It's Charles, is it? Yes.
So Charles is 25. Mm. He's working for a company called Gallagher in the city in London and loving that.
As a broker or...?
Are they happy? Well, it is what it is. Mm. You don't question something when it's how you've been brought up, because it's within you. I mean, the rest of the world may always challenge them because everything has moved on to such a different level.
Yeah.
But it hasn't here. Mm. And so the children get it.
That's lovely. I mean, I do know houses, maybe not quite of this size, but similar sort of things. Yeah. And they have said, even though it's been in the family for hundreds of years, the children, if you don't want to carry on, you do feel free that you can sell up and go, which I think is quite brave, really, because you do feel it's a huge responsibility and it needs a special undertaking to do it, because I think people look at you sitting up there in your beautiful castle, but it is really hard work to keep it moving on and up to date and getting people to come and to keep the roof on it and things.
Well, there's so many disciplines that you need, don't you? So you're running a tourist attraction, you're conserving the building, preserving everything that's in it, curating all the artifacts that are, in our case, we had archives that were spread over buildings all over the estate, so bringing them into one building so we could bring them together and then archive them correctly. And that's something that David's doing all the time. You're then running a restaurant and chefs and gardeners and a farm and a property portfolio. So if you actually look at everything you are trying to do, there's no one human being that can. But as long as you get the right people with you, most probably you get there in the end.
Yeah, and you've also got a small hotel, because you started the Engine Yard, didn't you? Which is the buildings that you developed into shops and things like that. Wonderful tourist attraction with a small hotel.
I know.
So that's another skill set.
I would say that I've just been very busy creating it, and now we're at the stage where we need to sort of take it to the next level to make it more operationally efficient. If anyone's out there listening, always approach me, because we've always got something that might interest them.
But your father has been a huge support, hasn't he? From when you said he came in on the trustees' meetings and held your hand a bit and how to handle them and things, because you were a young stripling then with baby children, and then imagine these grey-suited businessmen. Quite difficult to make your voice heard, shall we say, and not just be run over by what they wanted to do.
Yes, no, my father was amazing, and he's not with us anymore. But he was incredibly good at saying to the Board of Trustees, you know, David and Emma are the moment. They are with us now. What we need to do is support them. I think when you have change in these big families, it's so easy to see the next generation as not knowing anything, which is often what happens with generational change. And there's always a lot of conflict as one generation changes to another. But all the next generation truly needs is support.
It's funny that, because if you think if a duchess from two generations came down, she'd be lost, wouldn't she? She couldn't cope with today.
No.
It just wouldn't work.
No.
It has to move.
It has to move and evolve.
Yeah.
And often, if you look at history with these large houses, the women that have, I found in the podcast, that have come into them now, they're all very much of a moment. They're very similar women. They're not going to be... They're all going to make their business work.
They're all going to make their own mark in some different way.
Well, hopefully not an egotistical way.
No.
And
no,
hopefully I think it's about the practicality of just making it work.
So then the next generation that take over... I mean, if you think about it, a duchess from a few generations back, if they came in today's world, there's no way they could do it.
No way.
And it has to move on. And that's a big... jerk, isn't it, the transition period, because they've been doing it for so long, they're familiar with the reins, and then you come in with new ideas,
and that's all and part of the change.
Yes.
And generational change. And so I'm under no illusions that that's going to happen to me as well. I'm being graceful about that change and stepping back when you're told, okay, we've had enough of you now, move over. That is the key part of my next step.
back to your father, I heard a bit, and it might be gossip, I don't know, but it was a lovely story. It was apparently that you were a little bit soft on your partner-to-be, having obviously divorced or left the Duke or separated from him. And so your father was aware of this, and so he whispered a voice in his ear and told him that you were a wee bit sweet on him. And that's how you got together. Is that correct? I think that's so lovely.
Well, my father, I think, was looking at me and thinking, what is going to happen to her? You know, she's got all this responsibility, and he was really conscious that things were not right.
Yes.
And I think as an older man... you know, he could see various people around me in my life, and one of them being Phil. And he did most probably give him the, I think most probably this would be the right step for you. And so it was definitely there to support.
That's lovely. I think that's such a lovely story, because I imagine that if you wouldn't really want to put your hand on the Duchess's knee or whisper sweet nothings, because you're slightly inapproachable, aren't you, to be honest? For
Well,
for many men, yes.
Hopefully. Hopefully, I'm still trying to work that one out. But hopefully,
But you all live together in the castle.
Well, we do. That's something the press really love to pick up on.
Yeah.
I think it makes a great story for the Daily Mail, most probably.
Yeah.
But no, actually, I have a cottage now on the estate. Looking at a place called Croson Park. David has a flat here. We're looking up at it here. It's called the Shepherd's Tower. And he has... the lady that caused the upset, that broke down the marriage, has gone. And, so I'm all the time wanting him to have the right and nice lady to help look after him. So last night we went to Hambleton for Hugo's 21st.
Which was amazing. Lovely.
Did you do the gardens there, Bunny?
No. I was talking to Tim about them recently.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because he actually cloud prunes those cork oaks
himself.
Oh,
they look fabulous.
He climbs the trees and does it himself.
Oh, they look fabulous. We were looking at them last night. And at that dinner, we had Phil and David and Hugo's godfather, and so everyone gets along. And it's a story of, I suppose, what are we? We're a merged 21st century family. Mm. But if you look back at the history of families like the Dukes here, I think it was the third or fourth Duke who had his mistress down one line with the children down one side of the table and the wife with the other in the state dining room. So maybe we're just going back in time.
Yes. I love Charlotte Rudnell's story on your podcast about how when previous when guests would stay there, that most of them left their door unlocked. And if they didn't, they were thought of as a pain or something like that. So it was an awful lot of hope
that there'd be a lot of bed hopping.
Yeah, a lot of bed hopping went on, it seemed, yes. And we were actually quite prudish compared to times past, I think. Maybe it's because of the Daily Mail, people like that.
Who knows? But we've got lovely stories at Viva, particularly in our Elizabeth Saloon, which is the room used for The Crown and lots of the filming.
Yes.
And there's a panel where after dinner, the ladies would put a note to say where they'd be found if they sat next to someone nice at dinner.
Oh, I see.
So there's lots of mystique. And
Oh, so it's like Tinder in the olden days.
Most probably.
Yes. Very much easier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Massive energy, you've taken on lots of things here. I mean, the difference in these gardens now from when I saw them 20 years ago is unbelievable. They all seem in apple pie order. You've done lots of new spaces around me. It is pretty phenomenal, actually. It looks as well kept as any garden on this scale and size that I've ever seen, which I think is a real tribute to you, because managing a garden like this, which is how many acres in total? I mean,
the garden total is about 250 acres, but most of it is a woodland garden. So, and I always say, Bunny, I need help from you most probably, but it's not out there really that we are amazing from snowdrops on, and we need to think about focusing our marketing on the fact that the springs with the camellias, I planted thousands of camellias, rhododendrons, azaleas,
yes,
and opened up this woodland garden that Brown had left as a sort of a pleasure grounds in his designs that were drawn up in 1790 for Beaver, and we've just kept opening up another area. So you've got a sort of 5 mile walk. And I know that we've got this magical pixie trail coming up in our marketing for children and families through the summer, and all these gardens will be part of the pixie trail.
Amazing. No, really, really good. But having taken all this on, you did have a sort of bit of a meltdown a few years ago, which I think actually talking to Emma Bridgewater recently, because she obviously takes on masses, and she had rheumatoid arthritis was flared up, I think, because of the pressure. And I think a lot of high achieving people, suddenly they have this thing that makes them slow down, and it manifests itself in all different forms. But you obviously managed to sort it and find the cause and sort of calm down a bit perhaps and take life a wee bit more gently. But with hindsight, do you think that you could actually have prevented it happening if you had taken life slowly? Or do you think that's just the animal that you are, that you need, you've got the drive, you want to do it, and that's that? And actually it's happened and it's quite good now because you can reflect back on it.
Yes, Bunny, that, you know, that moment in my life, which was about when I was about 54, I'm 61 now, was really most probably triggered by what had happened in my marriage. And so I think I carried, like so many women do, when we commit to something as lifelong and we have 5 children with our partner, our husband or partner, it's very traumatic for the body to go through the breakdown of that. And so although at the within the moment I bulldozed on and life carried on, I think it had a sort of a delayed reaction with me, loads of guilt.
Yes.
And as I saw the effect it had with my family and children, enormous guilt. And so that then created its own sort of trauma within me. And so that was the trauma that then brought me to my knees with a mental breakdown. And from that moment, I would say, I've learned to listen and hear my body more. And so I don't think I've most probably changed. I hope I have. But we're always evolving to be better people, aren't we? But But that, I think most probably what I've done is just listen and understand the signs within my body.
Mm. And so anyone in a similar situation, you would say, may just try and do that. I mean, Emma said in her thing, she said she went for a walk to find herself. And every day she would go for a walk, exercise, to get back to herself. That was it.
So grounding. It's almost
like grand. Yeah. Yes.
So every day I run. Yes, I meditate.
Yeah.
I've learned to do self-Reiki so I can put my hands on myself and heal myself. So I've learned self-healing through the journey. And it also opened another world of people that, interestingly, feel like soulmates. So anyone on that spiritual journey will know exactly what I'm saying. Anyone who's not in any way connected to the spiritual evolution of an individual thinks I'm completely mad. So there's this... Yeah, it's a journey, isn't it? But hopefully we're all just evolving to become better human beings that then become, you know, that go to our grave having learnt the lessons that this life brings.
Yeah, and I think, you know, more and more research is helping people how we get over these things, finding a method that works for us, and more scientific evidence is coming to the fore, and things that we thought was absolutely bonkers a few years back, they're finding actually, you know, all sorts of things.
Well, things that we natural things that you pick in the gardens. We had one of the friends of one of my daughters was madly into mushrooms and magic mushrooms. And of course, they're almost legal now, aren't they? But even 5 years ago, it was, but you could, we have a pop-up at our retail village every weekend that sell these mushroom teas and things like this. So,
and they're thought to be healing rather than mind-bending.
Well, instead of putting chemicals in our body, they're microdosing with mushrooms to help with mental health, help with anxiety, help with sleep, help with all the things that our generation if you mention mushrooms, a lot of middle England people at a certain age, they think you've gone mad.
Yes, absolutely. To the gardens here, and I always remember Nicky Haslam saying he remembers coming here with late Diana Cooper, and on the terrace of the castle there were very chic, I think they were sofas, sort of rattan sofas with black cushions full with bright red roses. Do you remember that?
Yes.
He thought, and he said they were so chic and so good. Have you still got those?
No, but I've searched.
Oh, right. You ought to reissue them and sell them in the engine yard, because, I mean, they sound phenomenal, because you've got so many fabrics and wallpapers in the house, which you are now reproducing, aren't you, and selling and things, which your daughter is.
So we've done this collaboration with a company called De Gournay, and we have a whole range of wallpapers that are created from one of the wallpapers, Chinese wallpapers in the Wellington bedroom.
They're stunning. I had a look at them. They are amazing, aren't they? But obviously the gardens here, you know, it's a grade one listed building, the 2-star listed landscape and garden, so you can't sort of just get out your spade and put in a new patio or anything. It's all very well thought out and researched. And you did great things here when an archivist found that plan that Capability Brown did in 1780s or whatever to merge the lakes, and then you famously restored them with Alan Titchmarsh with a TV programme. Yes, and that's all coming on well now, is it?
Yes, we've got the last stretch now to do. So that's in part, I've set up a foundation for Beaver now called the American Friends of Beaver Castle, and the last bit of lake is in the project for the foundation to fund. And that will really make what Brown had envisaged. So when you look from our private terrace down on the Capability Brown landscape, you will actually see the river running down the valley, which is in the parkland below the castle.
Oh, lovely.
And so it looks like a river. It's actually all individual lakes
that be joined together visually.
Yeah.
I see. Oh, that's amazing. With Capability Brown, when he came to do these places, that was when they had a massive labour shortage, didn't they? Everyone was going to do building and roads and away from the land. So his schemes often swept away, like at Burley, massive formal gardens, and cut down the labour from sort of 70 men to 5 or something. So did he? Do you think pre Brown, that there were amazing formal gardens down below.
Have you? So we had something called the Wilderness, which was a not garden. Would it be a not garden? Sort of a yew maze, yes. Which is below the castle.
Which would have been way
that
back.
Was in 17
pre-Brown. Yeah, oh, right,
pre-Brown. And then obviously this was there was a very steep ravine here. And so you didn't get any flat terraces whatsoever. Mm. And Brown's main thing was to reduce the gradient of the drive up to the castle. But it was virtually like that. So it was really hard to get up here.
Virtually horizontal. Perpendicular.
Yeah. Yeah. So we had about 7,000 tons of soil down here on the bend as you go down out of the castle. And it took them 7 years to move it all by hand. And then Brown, also at Beaver, because this was one of his last ever projects.
Yes.
So he was 63 when he did this landscape.
Yeah.
And he and the late Duke, the fourth Duke, were both at the end of their life. And we have this wonderful letter that I found in the archives. And we translated it as saying, if I should not live another year or so, let me do something and create a landscape that shows I have lived. So by the time he came here, Bunny, he was thinking out of the box to how he'd done his previous landscapes, because he'd stopped taking everything out.
Right.
He wasn't moving villages and re-landscaping. He kept them in to embrace the heritage and history of the building. Mm. So in our case, there's an enormous swathe of grassland that's our parkland that was ridge and furrow going right up to the back door in the early 1700s or mid-1700s. And he changed that to make this massive parkland where his vision was to embrace the medieval hunting that was so... But Beaver was actually built as an upmarket hunting lodge.
Mm.
And the family were only here for the hunting season or the shooting season. And then they'd moved to Haddon Hall for the summer and then to Newmarket. They had another estate for the racing season. And so they were super wealthy. So they just move around their various properties.
Mm.
So I think your original question was, did they reduce the gardeners? Yes.
Well, did he come in and sweep away formal gardens?
No.
You don't think he did at all?
Because by the time he got here...
He changed his tune.
Well, he was evolving, as people do. And his landscape stretches from Beaver to Croson Park, where my cottage is. And there's a private road that links between the two. And that is also an ancient deer park that he embraced. So, and there's a hunting lodge there and a race course. So he was really, really creating the vista and the vision and the detail of the gardens he left for the duchesses.
Right. So these gardens here that we're looking now onto a series of terraces and a beautiful rose garden with obelisks and standard laurels and box plinths and crenellated yew hedges and things. These were more, is it Harold Peto in the 1920s or so for, is it Elizabeth Howard?
No, you're absolutely right. It's Harold Peto, and it's apparently in the shape of a ship, is it? It was Violet, the eighth Duchess, so Elizabeth was the fifth, and right. I'm the 11th, who was horrified that there was nowhere to parade, nowhere flat to sort of go and parade around the gardens.
Mm.
And so, much to her husband's horror, she, and Harold Peto was not a cheap garden designer, she instructed that to do this project, which cost an arm and a leg at the time. It's all recorded again in the archives, but has given us now the really only formal type of garden that we have. Mm. So we're very grateful. But it's like all those decisions that are made by these strong-minded women.
Yes.
At the time, most really think, oh, what a nightmare that was, but ended up being... Well, certainly in August, a lot of people only ever... you know, get to walk around this bit of the gardens. And then we've opened up a sort of a spiral walk right around the castle. So you can walk down and round to the other side and look at the view out to Lincoln Cathedral. Don't know if you've done that.
No, we must do that. And then you've created, so we're standing in a little hut here, which looks up to the castle, over the rose gardens. And then when we look down, you almost get vertigo, don't you? Because you look right down onto two gardens at a lower level, one with a pool, the lovely stone coping, cypress trees, statues. Is that the what? That's the one you put in?
Yes.
Yes.
So these are all the Siva statues that date back to about 1650. And they were actually done. And I think Siva, funny enough, was based in Grantham, of all places. Mm. And then Father Time as well, who's over there, who sadly lost his hand. We had an amazing tree last year, Bunny, that was at Copper Beach. So the tree that was there before fell onto the garden. So it was chaos last year. And of course, I hate taking these trees out. Mm. And everyone keeps saying to me, but you know, that's dead and that's not, but they're all dying at the same time. But it left behind with it that lovely little baby that was
planted. See, I can see it now. Yeah. You state.
So we called that the Duchess tree when it was there. But it left behind its little offspring. So we've connected with the tree that was there before. And thank goodness now I've restored the garden because it was a muddle last summer. But look.
But how it must grow with the extra light. Do you find because of the extra light, that rose garden has benefited from your loss of the copper beach?
So David Austin has very kindly put all these fabulous roses in. That it's their first year. So.
First year, my gosh, so you must have irrigation on those, have you?
No, none.
I suppose it's been quite wet. Lucky, because I remember you saying before, up on the higher up on the terraces. Castle, the terraces, the watering was a complete nightmare.
Well, it is a nightmare because it's hard to get water up. And once you get it up, it's hard to keep the pressure. But to show off the David Austin roses, I felt it was an amazing collaboration to work with them. And they've been fabulous. As we all know, that there's nothing like an Austin rose, is there?
He was saying, we had him on the podcast a few weeks back, and he was saying that he reckons it takes 4 years for them really to come into their own. I'd always thought two, but I mean, these in their first year look amazing, don't they?
They're looking good.
Really, really good.
They are.
Yeah. So looking down to these two gardens, so did you replicate what was there before with your pool and statues?
Well, it's lovely seeing people sitting on the benches, isn't it, down there?
Yeah, it is, yes.
So when you looked, so the hut wasn't here, but the base was when you last came. And you look down and there was no garden here whatsoever. But luckily, I found this very old book by someone called Divers from 1909. And it showed very roughly the layout of what I've done now in this garden. Mm. So despite what I really wanted, Bunny, was water spouting up from that lake. But that was going to cost, again, too much. So together with a gardener that we had at the time, we sort of cobbled this design because it has this feeling of being in Italy, these gardens, don't they?
Harold Pito always, you know, he obviously, a lot of his work is quite Italian based, isn't it?
Really? I don't know.
So, and well, I thought, as I understood it, Elizabeth Howard, who employed him, had been on the Grand Tour and she loved Tuscan gardens and things. And so that's what she wanted to create. And that certainly does look very in Italian, doesn't it?
Does it?
Yeah,
well,
I think so. The whole feel with the dramatic slope changes and the colours and everything. And I can hear the water in the background.
So important water, isn't it?
Yeah, it sounds really, really good.
I've never known quite, Bunny, what this is here. They tell me it's a Victorian rockery garden. But again, it's like very, very dry because it's underneath that yew tree. But I never know quite what to do with it and what to plant in it or if we should lob off some of the branches on that tree.
I think if you do things like you've got some ferns there, it's basically a little bit of a shady, grotto-y type feel, hasn't it? Mm. With some very formal Italian innate steps coming down. It's always getting them established, isn't it? But you've got ferns, things like Polystichum setifrum are very good ferns for dry places and shade. And have you got some euphorbias there and things? I mean, those sort of grotto-y, it's almost like the picturesque type gardening, isn't it, in the 1920s and 30s, which is very reminiscent of that.
Yeah.
So bulbs, cyclamens, things like that would be wonderful there. Really, really nice. And you could lift the canopy of the tree to get a bit more light in. But I quite like the fact that you've got this very sunny pool garden that you've created in this open glade. And you've got the contrast coming down through the down the steps, which is quite shady.
And then just down below the statue garden, you go down some steps where, what is the plant? Oh gosh, the climbing plant that I got over that walkway. It was meant to represent going into heaven because that's the cemetery garden for all our animals. And so all the dogs and horses are then planted down below.
I can see a rose over a little arch. Is it that?
Yes.
That you
what is it? Not wisteria. Laburnum.
Laburnum.
It's laburnum walk because it's meant to be the sunshine of going to heaven.
And you walk
down the steps, and then you see all the animals that are buried in the cemetery garden, and then that takes you on down into what we call the Japanese garden, which was when you last came. So what I've done most years is spend a lot of the winter clearing out dead trees, scrubby undergrowth, and then creating space for Charlie Williams from Burn Coon's Nurseries, who's then put in all the woodland plants and landscaped it for me.
Oh, lovely.
Do you know Charlie?
I know Burn Coon's Nurseries very well. They're brilliant, aren't they? They have a wonderful plant selection, always. Lots of beautiful, rare things. So what's he putting in there? Do you know?
Well, over the years, we put in the spring, I'd love you to come back and
yes.
I can go and show you.
Yeah,
but we put in... he wants it to be a national collection one day. And good. So we put thousands and thousands of, as I say, camellias, rhododendrons, azaleas, cherries, prunus, unusual trees. And so it goes, I spent, you know, hundreds of thousands over the last 20 years planting.
Really?
Yeah.
So you've got acid soil there?
Yeah, very. All the gardens are acid soil.
I see. That's why your roses do so well, don't they? But although it's not, I wouldn't think there's a lot of organic matter there, but I suppose since Pito's time, they must have been adding mulch,
yes,
mulch.
Yes,
all
definitely.
The time.
Definitely.
No, it's really come on so much. And so your next garden project?
Oh, well, getting ready for my daughter's wedding next year.
Oh,
in
lovely.
June. So trying to make sure everything's immaculate.
So that'll be in the castle?
Yes.
Or outside if it's sunny?
Well, yes, you most probably would love to do. It's June the 21st, so maybe drinks in the rose garden and then the reception in the castle.
And am I right in thinking she's marrying a duke?
She is marrying someone called William Garnock. That's his surname, but his parents they're titled, yes.
Right. Yeah. Oh, right.
From Scotland. But the fascinating thing of this story is that one of my predecessors was called Violet Lindsay, who married into the family. And that's the same family my daughter Violet's marrying into.
Oh, lovely. That is nice. And so will she have a stately home to run?
I don't know what I've no idea, but she'll know how to run it.
That comes across one, yeah, absolutely. So there's other things that you've got here. The tufa grotto. I was reading that Howard Pito initially put 30 grottos and pavilions in here.
Did he really?
That's massive. So you must be sort of out there digging away with your camellias and sort of coming across yet another tufa grotto.
Well, we've got six and they've restored them all. So,
wow.
Yes.
So there will be some more lying in there.
I'll have a look.
For you to come across. So it's been fascinating to see it, and it's amazing what you've done. Your private garden here, have you got any private
space?
So,
yes, we have some terraces on the private side, yeah. Which are now needing for me to get to and more attention needed. So I'd say that's on my list to do.
Oh, right. And what are you going to do there?
Well, because they're south-facing.
Whoa.
And not a lot of... Water. We've got, and also our beloved dogs live on the top terrace when they're not out roaming the gardens. We've got to be quite careful about what we do. And we have got a very small vegetable garden up there as well.
Oh, really? So you actually grow vegetables, do you?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Very nice. So with the water, you just literally have very slow pressure, very little water.
We have got underground tanks for rainwater, so off the roof of the castle that stores. So we can use that water, but the pressure of water coming in is very poor. Now, sometimes, like all these things, Bunny, and you and I most probably are very similar, when these builders say to you it can't happen, we know most probably there's a way around. Yeah. So I can and should be getting to the bottom of how we can make that happen. That will be on my list to do.
We don't have any mains water, and we just have spring source, and we have pumps in there. And I, when we came, there was this massive old Grundfos pump, or some, you know, some old pump that had been there for hundreds of years, and I always thought it was sacrosanct. And the thing always broke down every Christmas when you had a house full, and so there were no loos, nothing. And then we changed to a sort of little Japanese job that cost next to nothing, and has been a miracle ever since. And it's funny because you think the old, the good, and it was, you know, a massive great thing the size of this hut, replaced by some tiny little thing in a box that is completely fail safe. So I'm sure there is a way, because there must be the water here, obviously.
Of course.
You know, they wouldn't have put a castle here, would they, if there wasn't a massive supply of water. It's just getting
springs
it up.
There's springs everywhere.
Yeah,
yeah,
I'll give you the name of my pump manufacturer. And that will probably sort your terms.
We're very good at sharing contacts, aren't we, when we all have similar jobs to do, yeah.
Yeah, and you've got lovely nicknames, the Digger Duchess. So can you actually drive a JCB?
No, but I'm very good at...
Oh, I'm so disappointed.
They call me, I've got lots of nicknames. One being the Digger Duchess, the other being the Welsh Witch. So it doesn't really matter. Whichever one comes,
you will answer.
I'm fine
to
with
it.
Yeah.
Oh, right. First of all, if anyone's got a large garden, you know, a lawn that's sort of more normal size, and they've got weeds and borders and hedges to cut, you manage this magnificently with how many gardens?
We've got groundsmen. Three.
Yeah.
And then we've got a part-time head gardener and volunteers who comes 2 days a week.
Wow. I'm amazed you do it on that labour, because
But the volunteers are key to how we work these gardens. So they come in twice a week and they keep everything beautiful. So I couldn't do it without my volunteers.
But you say that, but volunteers, some people find are really quite... They're quite a handful to manage. So
yes.
I think you obviously have got the art there, because everything looks so superb. So you're obviously looking after your volunteers very well. And so what tip would you give to someone whose garden is getting out of control and they want to restore a bit? Any good tips that you would...
I think keep it simple.
She says, we're looking up at these
I know, but I've
statues.
Tried to simplify it as much as possible. One of the things that I think is wonderful about what's happening now with society is that we're not as bothered about the grass that's not always mowed immaculately. We really like the wildflowers and the longer grass and cutting the walkways through. Because that's where we're at with society, isn't it? So, I don't know, what would I say? To keep it simple, keep the palette of what you love and keep repeating it. When I find something that works, I tend to use it quite a lot.
Yeah, I can see you've got some Irish yew, golden Irish yew running along a path. And all the way along the bottom is Alcamilla mollis. But it's very simple combination, but it works, doesn't it? And it's so much easier to maintain a border of all Alcamilla mollis than 6,000 different types of plants all interacting in different ways.
I'm the worst to ask, because I think I'm hopeless at gardening, but they're very good at being tolerant with me, the gardeners. For example, the reason that box is looking a bit brown in that topiary garden down there is because I just said, just cut it, because I think we missed. And so anyway, they went in and cut it, and it's most probably been frosted, has it? Or cut at the wrong time.
I wonder if that is blight, actually.
Okay.
It looks a bit as though it's blight,
okay,
because it's got that look to it. I mean, if you cut box when it's going to be very hot and sunny, it goes all yellow after, doesn't it?
It goes off the year after.
No, it goes yellow
in
the weeks
so
after.
So if that was blight, you'd take that out and fill it in with something else.
Well, no, I would spray it. I would spray it with something called Signum. Something that you can't... A member of the public needs their spray certificates, but your gardens will have that.
Yeah.
And Signum is really effective.
Oh, great.
And a couple of blasts of that We'll probably sort it out. It's because it's been so damp, hasn't it?
Yeah.
But wait, well, I would probably spray it now, actually.
Okay, we'll get on.
But I do think you're right with cutting it. You know, if I cut some box the other week and it's scorchingly hot for the next week and that went brown. But if you cut it and it's cloudy like it is now for the next few weeks, it doesn't go that yellowy colour afterwards, which is not so nice. It's been lovely seeing this. I always bring my guests a small present. So I brought you a plant. I don't know if you saw it, Chelsea, this year. Did you go to Chelsea? There was a new cosmos.
Yeah, I did.
And there it's a cherry chocolate. It's cherry chocolate, it's called. So it's a cosmos that's perennial but slightly tender. And it's just this new cherry colour and it smells of chocolate. And I just thought it might be quite nice. It was introduced this year and it got awarded the runner-up for Plant of the Year.
Thank you, Bunny.
Someone gave me a cutting at Chelsea.
And thank you, Bunny.
So I hope it goes.
Where is it?
In your garden. It's in my car.
Oh, wonderful. Where should we plant it?
I'll find a place. I would put it in an urn. If you've got an urn that is easy to water nearby and to get it established for this year. I rooted it about 6 weeks ago and it's now about 2 foot high and it's got a few buds on it. So they do grow quite fast. But if your gardener propagates it up next year, you'll have a decent clump of them. They're very quick from cuttings. They're rooted in a couple of weeks, if that.
Yes. Oh, that's amazing.
Anyway, well,
hopefully when you come back next, it'll be here somewhere.
Yes.
For all to see. We'll call it the bunny area.
I hope the rabbits don't eat it.
Oh, it's been a delight talking to you and thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.